All right. Good morning, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in the second installment of Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32 in Tehillim. We, of course, dedicate our learning this morning in memory of the five Kedoshim killed in yesterday's terror attack in Har Nof, in memory of Rabbi Moshe Tursky, Rabbi Avram Shaul Goldberg, Rabbi Kamen Levine, Rabbi Aryeh Kapinsky, and the Druze officer, the Druze police officer that ran so bravely right into the line of fire and lost his life, Zidan Sif. You know, it's interesting, someone forwarded me today, Ravaji Yosef, Zichat Livracha, in his Yalkut Yosef, writes that any individual, any non-Jewish individual who clearly is Moser Nefesh for Klal Yisrael, is automatically considered Mechaside Umos Ha'olam, righteous Gentiles, and Ravad Yosef actually paskins that one is supposed to make a kel mali rachamim for such an individual. And the truth is, to a certain degree, it restores a little bit of our faith in humanity. Because when we see the horrific events like we saw yesterday, we wonder to ourselves if the world has simply lost its mind, if humanity is just simply morally bankrupt. And on one hand, we see the worst of humanity, we see the selflessness of humanity, all going ahead and converging on one event in one particular place. So we dedicate our learning li'ilui the neshamos of these kedoshim, as well as a zechus of a refuah shleima for Chaim Yechiel ben Malka, Shmuel Yerucham ben Bela, Eitan ben Sara, Moshe ben Atara, Aryeh ben Bracha, who are all individuals who were very severely injured in yesterday's attack, as well as a zechus for refuah shleima for Zelda Bas Mali, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamas of the Kedoshim will have an aliyah, and all of those who need a refuah will have one bekarov. You know, so it's interesting that as I was preparing the shiur yesterday, the truth is, if I'll be honest, I had very incredible difficulty preparing the shiur yesterday. In light of all of the events that were going on, I felt myself unable to focus on many things, and I was trying to figure out what exactly to learn today. Because obviously on one hand it's a Tehillim Shir. On the other hand, you know, we don't exist in a vacuum. And as much as we are 6,000 miles away, the truth is I often feel, I was telling my wife yesterday, that it's a strange dynamic that for some reason when there are tzaros, so I feel the feeling of galus in even a more compounded way. Because here we are 6,000 miles away from Achinu B'Yisrael. We don't have an opportunity to go to Levaya. We don't have an opportunity to be Menachem Mavel, to comfort mourners. And it just really amplifies and exacerbates the fact that as much as we live in Baruch Hashem, a beautiful and wonderful community, we're really not where we are supposed to be. And we're really not in, we might be in a nice Jewish community, but certainly not in the Jewish homeland. And then so I was thinking what I should discuss today, and then I realized, you know, I say every single week that the words of David HaMelech give us the strength to deal with our own difficult situations. So I said it would be a little bit hypocritical if on a day when we're looking for solace, when we're looking for comfort, when we're looking for insight, that we return anywhere but the words of David HaMelech. And as Hashgacha Pratis, as divine providence would have it, I think that there's a pasuk in this particular kapitel in Perek Lamed Beis that I think, first of all, give us incredible perspective in life and perhaps could also give us a little bit of perspective in our current circumstances. So I'm going to draw your attention, number one, to one pasuk, which is just to reorient ourselves a little bit. We started last week with Kapitel Lamed Beis, and in Kapitel Lamed Beis, we spoke about the idea that David HaMelech is focusing on the theme or the motif of tshuva. So we spoke all of last week focusing on what it means to do tshuva. We spoke about different models of tshuva. This week I want to draw your attention just to one pasuk. So if you look at the underlined pasuk, pasuk vav, azos yispalel kol chasid elecha la'is mitzo. For this, let every pious man pray to you at a time when you may be found. Rak l'shatef mayim rabim elav lo yagiyu. Indeed, the flood of many waters will not reach him. So as very often happens in Sefer Tehillim, and this, of course, is the great anomaly of Tehillim, that when we try to sometimes to understand just the basic translation of words in Tehillim, they simply do not make sense. They don't make sense to us. So what exactly is happening over here? So of course, on a basic level, just to give you the pashut pshat, basic level, so in line with the tshuva motif, David HaMelech is talking about over here, Azos yispalo kol chasid eilecha le'is mitzo. If you notice, if that phrase sounds familiar, le'is mitzo, at a time when God allows himself to be found, that is quoted very often in the context of what we'll call Elul Yamim Noraim literature. The idea that ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always accessible. Always accessible. You know, it was interesting that when I was reading one of the news reports from yesterday's events, there was a reporter who was discussing the idea that it was such a horrific attack because it attacked rabbis, and Jews believe that rabbis have a direct line to God. And I said to myself, you know, I mean, Jews think many things about rabbis, right? But what I thought was so interesting was the idea that, in fact, we don't actually believe that. Meaning, we believe that everyone has a direct line to God. The fact that somebody is a rabbi, meaning, this is actually, interestingly enough, when the movement of Hasidus first started, one of the things that Misnagdim took greatest issue with Hasidim is that Hasidim absolutely believe that their Rebbe is the conduit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And in the Misnagdish world, it was felt that it's even a little bit of heresy. Because there's no such, I don't need a conduit. I don't need anyone to intervene on my behalf. I don't need anyone to speak on my behalf. There's a whole discussion, a big discussion among the halachic opinions as to the nature of davening at graves. So there were many opinions historically that were very much against the notion of davening at a kever. Reb Moshe actually discusses, he says, people misunderstand the idea of a kever. He says, you're not going to daven to someone who's dead. You're not asking someone who's dead for assistance. What I could say is sometimes I don't have the requisite merits for God to fulfill my particular request. So I could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if I don't have the requisite merit, maybe my parent does, maybe my friend does, maybe a sibling does, maybe a spouse does, maybe an ancestor does, but I don't ask for anyone to go ahead and daven on my behalf because I can daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What's interesting is, you know, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, if you notice in the Slichos we have, there's a beautiful, beautiful paragraph at the end of Machnisei Rachamim. So made into a popular song. So the text of it is Machnisei Rachamim, Hachnisu Tfilasenu Lifnei Melech Malchei Hamlochim. It's a statement to the angels, that angels, please bring our prayers before God. Rav Chaim Volozhiner instituted in the Yeshiva Volozhin, they would not say that paragraph. Why? Because Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, I don't need angels to do anything on my behalf. I can do everything directly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So although there is this idea that God is always accessible to us as individuals, there is this concept that there are times where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a little bit more accessible, where God makes himself even more accessible than usual. The truth is, it's kind of no different than our human relationships. There are times that we know that are good for conversations, and there are times that are not good for conversations. So too with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are times God is always receptive, but there are times when he's even more receptive. So this idea, Azos yepalo kol tzadik eilecha le'eis mitzo, there are times that God goes in and makes himself more accessible to us. So the Sfarim write that refers to Elul, that refers to Rosh Hashanah, Aseres Yimei Tshuva, Yom Kippur, even all the way through Shmini Atzeres. When God makes himself accessible, that is the time that the pious individual realizes he should seize the opportunity to converse and dialogue with God. That's the Pasha Pshat, simple understanding, and in line with the general motif of the Kapitel. But I want to share with you a couple of different ideas. Take a look at number two. So there's an amazing Gemara in Maseches Brachos. The Gemara says, Azos yipalo kol chasid eilecha le'eis mitzo. What does it mean? For this, let every pious man pray to you at a time when you may be found. Amar Rabbi Chanina, le'eis mitzo, zo isha. What does le'eis mitzo refer to at a time that you may be found? That refers to a wife. Now, before we go on, look at Rashi number 3 for just a moment. So Rashi says, yispalo le'eis mitzo. Now the Gemara, Rashi understands that the Gemara is going ahead and looking and translating this pasuk in a fundamentally different way than we have until now. So look at Rashi number 3. Yispalel la'eis mitzo. Yispalel sheyihiyu mitzuyin lo kisheyitztarich. The Gemara understands that there are certain things that a person should daven to God, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help them at the time when they are going to need help. So the Gemara says, what's an example of something you should daven for, that God should help you at a time when you need it? The Gemara says, marriage. Shene emar, matza isha, matza tov. As the pasuk says, if a man finds a wife, he finds ultimate good in life. So according to the first opinion of the Gemara, the way the Gemara says, Azosius palo kol chasid la'is mitzo, for this a righteous person should daven to God at a time when they are going to need help. When does a person need help? So I would venture to say, by the way, it's not just needing help in order to find a suitable partner, but it's asking God for help in maintaining a proper partnership. What the Gemara is saying is that a person needs siyata d'shmaya, a person needs divine providence, a person needs divine assistance in order to be able to maintain, to nourish, and to nurture a healthy marriage. That's why the Gemara says, shlosha shutfin ba'adam, there are three partners, not just in the creation of life, but there are three partners in the establishment of a marriage. Ish, Isha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A marriage without God, a relationship without God, ultimately is going to be a relationship that is not built on a solid foundation. So, so marriage. The Gemara just adds in over here, which is interesting. Ben Ma'arava, ki nosiv inish esesa, in Eretz Yisrael. Ma'arava means the West, refers to Eretz Yisrael. When a man would marry a woman, Amrile, they'd ask the chasin the following, Matza o Motza? Did you find or did you find? Now, what does that mean? Matzah, dichsiv matzah isha matzah tov, yafek mertzah ma'ashem. Because quoting one pasuk that says, if a man finds a woman, he has found good. Motzah dichsiv umotzah ani mar mimaves esa isha. So, okay, this piece of Solomonic wisdom, which we're not going to get too into right now, is that Shlomo HaMelech writes, I have found something more bitter than death, and it is woman. Now, Shlomo, I know, very dangerous to say such a thing like this in this shir. Shlomo HaMelech was not making a statement about women. What Shlomo HaMelech was making a statement about is Shlomo HaMelech's Solomonic downfall was because of women. Now, it wasn't the women's fault. It was Shlomo HaMelech's fault. It started with his marriage to Basparo, and ultimately, again, there was a downward spiral for him. So in Eretz Yisrael, when a man would get married, they would ask him, tell me, matzah or motzah? How's it going? Is it tov? Is it wonderful? Or is it motza isha? I mean, don't use this at Sheva Brachas. So again, first approach of the Gemara over here is azosis palo kochosed le'is mitzo. There are things that we have to ask God for constant help with. Number one is marriage. Next, the Gemara says, Rabbi Nassan Omer le'is mitzo zu Torah. What does it mean, something that I have to ask God for help with at a time when I will need it? That refers to Torah. Shene emar, ki motza'ai motza'chaim. So Rabbi Nosson says, it refers to spirituality. That a person really can't accomplish anything spiritually without the help of God. You know, we've spoken about this concept before. I think last year we discussed this idea. The Gemara says that the Yetzahara, the evil inclination, the desire to do wrong, is so powerful that ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'ezra, were not the fact that God helps me, there would be no way for me to actively combat it. So what does it mean? Azos yispalo kol chasid. What should the pious person daven for? That when they need something, God will be there to help them. That refers to spirituality. God, help me with my spirituality. He goes on. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar li eis mitzo zomisa. That refers to death. The chassid should daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that God should be there for him or for her at the time of death. What does that mean? Shene emar, lamaves totzaos, kasha shebekulin askara, mechan shebekulin ashika. Because the Gemara says, there are different ways that people die. Some people have horrific deaths, some people have very painful deaths, and other people have very painless, tranquil, and almost serene deaths. So the Gemara gives an example, askara. Askara is a Talmudic ailment where essentially a person died, you know, chasrom, through asphyxiation. That what happens is that the airways would constrict and they would essentially die because of the inability to breathe. So that the Gemara considers to be the most severe form of death. On the other hand, what the Gemara calls neshika, a death by a kiss of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara describes it like pulling a hair from milk. No friction, no difficulty, no sickness, no turbulence. That's how the Gemara describes the death of Aaron HaKohen, the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara literally says that what should the chassan daven for? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be there for them at the time of death. Then when it is time for me to leave this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please try to make sure that my death is as tranquil and serene as possible. Lastly, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan says, Li'eis mitzo zo kvura. This refers to burial. Now, what does it mean, this refers to burial? If you take a look at number four bays, which is on the next page. Number four bays. So here, the Marsha So this is, again, quoting from the Rav Shmuel Idels. I think I've told you about the Marsha in the past. The Marsha's given last name was not Idels. The Marsha married into a very, very wealthy family, but then his who agreed to support him, he was an outstanding scholar of his, one of the outstanding scholars of his generation. His father-in-law died. So the Marsha said, okay, I'm going to go to work and support, you know, Nebach, my mother-in-law, who's the widow, and my wife. And his mother-in-law said, no. His mother-in-law said, you should continue your learning because you have the opportunity to do something great for Klal Yisrael. And she took upon the responsibility of Parnassah for the family on herself. He had such great gratitude towards her that he took on her last name. Idels was his wife's maiden name. That was his. That was the way he gave Hakaras HaTov to his mother-in-law. So the Marsha writes, this is paragraph base, Zukvura. Afal gav dikvura chaveru chayev lekavro ki darmina perak nigmar adin kvura min atarah shenemar ki kabar tikra mikol makom lo hakol zochin lekach. So the Marsha says something amazing. The Gemara says is as much as we assume that when we die people will bury us. Sometimes it happens that people don't have a bakavadik burial. Sometimes it happens that people, for whatever reason, are not looked after by others. Therefore, says the Gemara, we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Hashem should make sure that even our kavur is taken care of. So the way the Gemara understands this pasuk is dramatically different from the pasuk pshat. The way the Gemara is describing this is that David HaMelech is saying, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I really need you in all areas of life because there are certain things that I just can't fully control. There are certain, you know, there are certain processes in life which we do have absolute control over, but there are other things in life where I need divine providence in order to be successful. And that's how he understands al zos. There are certain things yispalel chassid that the righteous man, the pious man, will daven for elecha to God le'es mitzo, because I'm going to need something, and in that moment of need, God, I need to make sure that you are going to be present. And the Gemara gives four different opinions. What are the things in life for which we absolutely need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help? Number one, says the Gemara, is marriage. Yes, so we often think about this in the realm of finding a spouse. And yes, there's no question, one needs incredible siyata d'shmaya in order to be able to find a spouse. But we all know that building a healthy marriage, the truth is, finding the spouse, in the grand scheme of things, finding the spouse is actually the easy part of marriage. The much more difficult part is, once you find that individual, building a healthy, meaningful, enduring, nourishing, fulfilling, gratifying relationship, that's the incredibly hard life avoda. So Gemara says, for that, you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you don't bring God into your marriage, if you don't bring God into your home, you will have a difficult time being able to establish the foundation and the bedrock for that relationship. Number two, spirituality. There are so many forces and so many pushes and pulls that act upon us in this world. Right? The Yetzirah. And remember, when we speak about the Yetzirah, it's very important. He's not, you know, the guy dressed in red, you know, with the long tail and the pitchfork standing on my shoulder. We don't, it's actually a Christian concept. We do not believe in that idea of the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah is not a separate, independent entity, just like the Satan is not a separate, independent entity. The Christian concept of Satan is another force working against God. The Yetzirah represents the inner pushes and pulls that we have. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu created us with all different types of things going on with inside of us. And we have, all of us have, for some reason, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this almost like self-sabotaging mechanism. We call that the Yetzirah because we know that more often than not, when we don't accomplish in life, it's not because anyone else did something to us. When we don't accomplish in life, more often than not, it's because we sabotage ourselves. And we're not even sure exactly why I did that. But for some reason, there is that self-sabotaging mechanism. So therefore, the Gemara says, if you want to be successful in your spirituality, it's an uphill battle. It really is an uphill battle. And you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to ask God's help for that. You know, it's an amazing thing. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything. We ask Him for our parnasa. We ask Him for our health. But sometimes we forget to ask Him for help in cultivating a relationship with Him. I want to be close to you. I want to have a connection with you. It's hard for me. So Yibon Shalom, you see, I'm extending my arms to you. Pull me a little bit closer. Le'es mitzo, we need HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help for that. Number three, death. We all know that we leave this world, but the circumstances under which we leave often are not determined by us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't ask for immortality, that for sure not. But at least, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I ask you that let my departure from this world be benachos, let it be serene, let it be tranquil. Let me know that I've tied up all the loose ends of my life before I take leave of this world. And lastly, kavura. Certainly after I'm gone, after I die, I have no control over the process of my burial, of how what's done at Kodesh Baruch Hu, I ask you in those moments to please step in and make sure things are taken care of. So again, the overarching motif of the Gemara is David HaMelech is essentially saying, both in life and in death, I need God to be my partner in order to be successful in my marriage, in my spirituality, in my death, in my burial, pretty much the entire gamut of dynamic adult life activity. Ribono Shel Olam, I need you to partner with me to make it happen. Take a look at number 5. So far now we've had two approaches. The simple pshat, the simple understanding, now the Gemara. Rashi comes along and understands things a little bit differently. So Rashi writes, Le'is mitzol, behimatzach, lekabel tfilaso. So according to Rashi, David HaMelech is saying like this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need to know that you are going to go ahead and be receptive to my prayer at a time when I need to reach out to you. So what is it, David says, what is it, God, that I'm going to be reaching out to you about? Uma hizos, what is it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that I need your help with? Rak l'shataf mayim rabim, asher lo yagiyu elav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have one request. The one request is that, using the English translation number one, that the flood of many waters will not reach me. What does that mean? Shelo yipol biyat ha'umos, shehem kimayim shotvin. Don't let me fall into the hands of my enemies, which are very often like a raging body of water. V'chein matzinu, she'espalel David alzos va'amar, nil pana biyad Hashem, ki rabin rachamav uviyad adam ala polas. David HaMelech says, let me fall into the hands of God because God is compassionate, but let me not fall into the hands of man. So according to Rashi, he understands this whole thing on a much more limited fashion. That David HaMelech is saying, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I have one major request. Azos yispalo chosei lecha le'is mitzo. I, David, your chosid, I, your pious one, I have one request that I need you to pay God very careful attention to, and that's what? Rak l'shatef mayim eilav lo yagiyu. Don't let the raging waters overtake me, which Rashi understands to mean a metaphor. Don't let me fall into the hands of my enemies. If I fall into the hands of man, there's no telling what's going to happen. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I ask of you, please, if something has to happen to me, let it happen at your hands. Let it not happen at the hands of my fellow man. Of course, if we take this Rashi just a little bit further. So again, remember, Rashi's understanding over here that David HaMelech is saying, don't let me fall into the hands of my enemies. But taking it one step further, we could also understand what Rashi's saying is, don't let my difficulties overtake me. Meaning, according to Rashi, what David HaMelech is saying over here is that the waters are really a metaphor for the difficulties, trials, and tribulations of life, which is very interesting, because normally, biblically, water is a metaphor for
tranquility.
Right now, that could be tranquility of Torah, that could be tranquility of Chesed, but usually water is a metaphor for something that is calm and soothing. It's interesting, however, over here that David HaMelech is saying, Shetef Mayim Rabim. He's talking about surging water. Sometimes the waters are not soothing. Sometimes they're not calm. Sometimes they're not serene. Sometimes it's like a tidal wave that's threatening to overtake me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what I ask of you is, don't let the waters of difficulty overtake me. So it could be, according to Rashi, what David HaMelech is saying is something exceptionally profound, which is, David HaMelech, we've spoken about this many times before. If there's one thing that David really doesn't ask for, it's what?
Money.
Okay, but that's an easy one. Why doesn't he ask for money?
Because
he has it, right? Most people who have money, Baruch Hashem, don't have to ask for money. What else doesn't he ask for? He doesn't ask, if you notice, to have a life free of challenge. He might ask for a particular suffering to end, but he never says, Ribono Shel Olam, you know what? When am I just going to be able to put my feet up, right? Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. How long am I going to have to? David never asks that. Why does David never ask that? Because he realizes it's not part of the fabric of the human condition. You know, it's interesting. There's a beautiful medrash, and last week, I actually quoted this in the Wednesday night parsha shiur last week. The pasuk says, "Va'avraham zakin ba'bayamim, va'Hashem beirachis Avraham bakol." Avram Avinu was old, advanced in age, and God blessed Avram with everything. And the Mefarshim tried to understand, what does it mean, God blessed Avraham with everything? So the Mefarshim go in all different directions, but there's an amazing Medrash. The Medrash writes one simple phrase, Shelo nisnasa od. He had no more nisyonos. He had no more nisyonos. The tests were over. A lifetime filled with tests. No more tests. If you're Avram Avinu, the greatest gift that God could give you is the knowledge that you will never be tested again. I'm the luckiest man in the world. Only one problem with that, which if you notice is right after that pasuk, what does Avram go on to do and accomplish? Absolutely nothing. Why? Because the moment that your nisyonos end is pretty much the moment that life is over. Part of the fabric of life is challenge. Part of the fabric of life is difficulty. Part of the fabric of life is that life is an uphill battle. The moment that you plateau, the moment that you say, wow, this is pretty easy sailing over here, or the moment that you encounter no friction in life is probably a good indication that life is winding down. So the only thing that Avraham Avinu goes on to accomplish after that pasuk is? What does he do in Parashas Chayisara, last week's parasha? He finds a wife for Yitzchak. He finds a wife for Yitzchak. Again, remember, there's no more real dynamic activity on the part of Avraham Avinu, because again, when nisyonos are over, when challenges are over, that's pretty indicative that life is winding down as well. So if you notice again, David HaMelech never asks God. He says, how long will I have to suffer with this reality? How long will I have to deal with this particular challenge? But he never ever says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when are the challenges going to end? Because he realizes that that's not going to happen. In fact, I mentioned before that part of the greatest mistaken notion we have, and many people are very unhappy because of this, is that we think life is supposed to be easy. I know where we got that concept from. That is a Western culture idea, a Western society idea, that life is supposed to be easy. Life, we're supposed to remove as many obstacles from you as possible. If you're having a difficult time in life, it's usually because you're doing something wrong. You need to adjust something. That is very counter-cultural to Judaism, because Judaism realizes that life is all about struggle. Struggle is part of the fabric of existence. If you're looking for a life without struggle, we have it. When does it occur? Right? After 120, Olam Haba is a life without struggle. Olam Haba is a life without nisyonos. But this world is all about nisayon. It's all about the tests, all about the challenges. So David never says, God, when is it all going to stop? He says, God, when is this all going to stop? When is that going to stop? But recognizing that challenge is part of the fabric of the human condition. According to Rashi, what David HaMelech is saying is, Ribono Shel Olam, I understand that I'm going to have to be challenged. What I'm asking of you is, don't let me get washed away by the waters of my challenges. That sometimes what happens in life when a person encounters struggle is that the struggle brings them to their knees. The struggle causes them to give up. The struggle causes them to say, I can't go on anymore. Ein li koach. I have no more strength. I can't battle anymore. I'm happy to engage in the struggle. I'm happy to take on the challenges of life head on. But you have to give me the koach, not to get washed away by the turbulent waters of life adversity. Yes?
Should we learn that you dive in to sit and learn and to go back to
the... Absolutely, yes. We learned very good in Kapitel Lamed of Acha Sha'alti Me'es Hashem Osa Avakesh Shifti Beves Hashem Koyme Chayai. So the answer to that will have to be that one of two things. Either David HaMelech was saying that, remember the Malbim on that Pasuk? Everybody remembers the Malbim. The Malbim says that when was he saying this? After he waged all of his battles. He realized that life was winding down. He realized now that again, pretty much what he had to do had already been accomplished. So pretty much with David HaMelech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I realize that if I ask you for life serenity, pretty much I'm also asking for death. Right? Not imminent death, but death. But that's okay. I'm ready for that now because I feel like I've done everything I was supposed to do. But in his prime, he never made a statement like that. So Rashi was trying to highlight to us that Azos Yispal Kochos Eleis Mitzvah Kadosh Baruch Hu, I have one specific request of you, and that is not to take away the challenge, but give me the strength to meet my challenges. Give me the strength to stand up to my challenges. Give me the strength not to be swallowed up or taken over or eclipsed by my challenges. Now let's expand this a little bit more, because obviously what David HaMelech is asking for in this kapitel is something that we all ask for throughout our lives. Some of us because we encounter real dramatic struggle and we don't know how we're going to make it through. And so we say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just give me the strength to be able to make it. Maybe others don't encounter such a dramatic struggle, but everybody has struggle in life. So David HaMelech is asking something that we all need, which is the strength to be able to, if not overcome, at least withstand life adversity, to not get swallowed up by the raging waters of life. So how does one do this? So I want to share with you two very interesting ideas. Look at number six, Rav Hirsch. So Rav Hirsch writes over here a very beautiful insight. He says, as we have already explained in our commentary to Genesis 28, Hispalo. Now, just so you should know what he's referring to over here, he's referring to when Leah Imenu names her son Naphtali. Naphtali. So the root of Naphtali, interestingly enough, is what we call Pei Lamed Lamed, which interestingly enough is the same etymological root as the word Hitpalel, to daven. So Rav Hirsch, and by the way, Rav Hirsch also points out, not here, but in Chorev, he says it's interesting that Hitpalel is what we call in the Hitpael form. Hitpael form, it's a reflexive verb. Right, meaning that it's not something that I'm just doing, it's something that's also being done to me. So Rav Hirsch says, what's happening over here? He says, Hitpalel means to acknowledge and imbue oneself with the knowledge of truth, and thus to acquire the proper insight concerning one's self and one's relationships. So I'll just tell you this outside. Rav Hirsch, well, I'm going to tell you one other piece outside, they don't do this inside. Rav Hirsch says that the word, what does Lehitpalel mean? How do we translate Lehitpalel? Right? I'm sorry, Hispalo. Maybe that's easier for some, right? Right? So how do we translate it? To pray. What does that mean? Rav Hirsch says, actually, Lehit Palel means to engage in the process of self-judgment and introspection. Rav Hirsch says that tefillah is all about taking stock of one's self. You know, there's a fundamental dispute in the framework of prayer as to whether or not one is supposed to allow their mind to wander, or whether or not one is supposed to remain firmly affixed on the words themselves. And there are two schools of thought. One school of thought says, no, you can't let your mind wander, because again, you got to pay attention to the words. Rav Hirsch is of the opinion that you could allow, not only can you allow, but in fact, your mind is supposed to wander. Now again, wander to the right things. Tefillah is the one time of the day, or however many times a person davens, where they have the opportunity to think about themselves and to think about their lives. Meaning, when else does a person actually have time to do that? Tefillah is when everything else is blocked out. So Rav Hirsch says it's a time, Lehitpalel. Chazal wanted us to use that time to take stock of our lives. What am I doing? Where am I going? What's the purpose of my life? What are my goals? What do I want to achieve? Who do I want to be? Where am I now versus where I was 5 years ago? Where do I want to be 5 years from now? Tefillah is the time where we engage in this process of almost judgmental introspection. So he says, for the root palal means to judge, to pass judgment. The literal meaning comes to the fore, quite particularly in this instance. So remember, again, why is Rav Hirsch bringing this down? Because if you look back, and you don't have to look back anymore, but I'll tell you, remember, he uses the Lashon va'alzos, or alzos yispalel kol chosid le'es mitzo. The Lashon of yispalel. So we translate it as pray. Rav Hirsch says, no, it means something much more. The man who truly serves God regards all material suffering only as a means sent him to awaken the right spiritual life within his soul. Therefore, let such a man, whenever he senses that suffering is about to descend upon him, take the opportunity thus afforded him to evaluate himself. Let him strive to acquire the proper insight and judgment concerning himself, his past, his present, and the achievements which the Lord will expect of him in the future. This is exactly what our sages taught. If a person sees that suffering is coming upon him, let him examine his deeds. So what Rav Hirsch is saying is something so amazing. Rav Hirsch goes with the same imagery as Rashi. That what David HaMelech is talking about over here is, don't let my suffering wash me away. Don't let my suffering overcome me. But how does a person not allow, how does a person prevent the challenges of life from totally swallowing or eclipsing the individual? Azos yispalel. What happens when I encounter challenge, says Rav Hirsch? What happens? It's supposed to awaken me for self-evaluation and introspection. In other words, use the suffering, use the challenge, use the difficulty as a platform to evaluate how I am living my life and what I am doing. Use it as the opportunity for a wake-up call. Again, remember, as I always say, it doesn't mean that you're going to discover why it is that negative things are happening to you. That's an age-old question, much older than us, and certainly what wasn't answered before us won't be answered after us. Mashiach will answer that for us. But that's not the point. We don't focus as much on the why as much as we focus on the what. Azos yispalo. So when the righteous person finds himself engulfed or enveloped by difficulty, what does he do? Yispalo. He introspects. He uses as a wake-up call. What do I need to change? What do I need to do? How do I react? How do I adjust? What should I do with these circumstances? And how should they inform the way I'm living my life presently as well as going forward? He goes on. He says, Shataf is to wash away and also to rinse away. That is to remove an impurity or foreign element by means of water. Here, as in many other instances of our scriptures, suffering is also represented by the allegory of floods of water. Hence, the thought contained in the second half of verse 6 would be as follows. Those mighty floods of suffering are intended solely to destroy or remove foreign elements, shall not come to him who takes stock of himself in time and mends his ways. Of course, even such men will experience suffering and harsh, grievous pain, but these trials which he must undergo have as their purpose, not lishtof, to wash away the individual, but to test him and thus increase his moral fortitude even more. So Rav Hirsch says something so beautiful, that if a person goes ahead and upholds the first part of the pasuk, al zos yispalel kol chosid le'eis mitzo, that if the righteous person understands that when encounters suffering, difficulty, or tragedy, he uses it as a platform to lift himself up, use it as a platform to engage in introspection, how could I be more, what could I do differently, how could I advance myself, then you know what? Rak l'shetef mayim rab me'elav lo yagiyu, the waters won't wash you away. If you use the difficulty, tragedy, challenges of life to change yourself, to better yourself, to uplift yourself, if you use them somehow as a catalyst for growth, then the raging waters will not sweep you away. Yes?
Couldn't the raging waters also be somewhat of a metaphor for cleansing of the body and the soul as well?
He said 100%. And in fact, again, that's Rav Hirsch actually, I only gave you part, but excellent point. And the next part, he actually says that you will find if you grow from these circumstances, you will actually find that the suffering has a cleansing, purging effect. Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me show you one more piece. So again, now remember, this is all part of Rashi. All part of Rashi's game. Let me show you one more piece in the couple of minutes that we have left. So look at number 7. So jumping ahead a little bit to Amalek. So remember, interestingly enough, the Torah tells us two different obligations when it comes to Amalek. If you take a look at number 7, and we'll see, we're not going off topic. We're going to tie this all back in just a moment. But if you look at number 7, Zohar is Asher Asalach Amalek B'derach Beit Eschem Mitzrayim. You have to remember that which Amalek did to us. Remember, Amalek was the first nation to attack us when we left Egypt. Right? No one wanted to start up with us because everyone heard or saw what happened in Egypt. And Amalek comes along and they attack us. So skip down to the last phrase, last pasuk 19. So first, remember Amalek. Then the Torah says, V'haya ba'aniach at Shem Elokecha lecha mikalevecha misaviv. And it will when God gives you the land, speaking of the land of Israel, Kadosh Baruch Hu gives you the land to settle in, it's your inheritance. Timcha as Zechar Amalek mitachas Hashemayim, you shall obliterate or erase the memory of Amalek from underneath the heavens. Lo tishkach, don't forget. What's the obvious question? Right? Why do you need both? If the Torah is telling me, and that's how I underline them in number 7, if the Torah is telling me, don't forget, or I should say remember, then obviously part of remembering is not forgetting. So why do you have to say remember and don't forget? I mean, if God was a Jewish mother, I understand it, right? But again, at the end of the day, why the double lashon? Why the need for both phrases? So I want to share with you what I think is an incredible and without being dramatic, I think a life-changing idea. So this is in number 8. This is from a sefer, Shailos Utshuvos Mima'amakim. So I've mentioned before, the Shailos Utshuvos, literally responsa from the depths, was written by Rav Ephraim Oshri. Rav Oshri was the Rav in the Lodz ghetto. So remember again the Kovna ghetto, I'm sorry. So remember again that there wasn't an official chief rabbi of the Kovna ghetto. The original rabbi of the Kovna ghetto, when the Jews were in Kovna, was Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Hashem Yikom Damo. But Rav Elchanan Wasserman was executed by the Lithuanians at the Ninth Fort. The Ninth Fort was an area right outside of the Kovna ghetto where the Lithuanians would line up Jews and just summarily execute them. After Rav Elchanan Wasserman was executed, so the Jews of the Kovna ghetto turned to Rav Ashri. So Rav Ashri himself was already a recognized Talmud Chacham before the war, already a Rav. He did not want to assume the mantle of responsibility for deciding on the questions of halacha that came up within the ghetto, but the residents of the ghetto left him no choice because they kept coming to him with his questions. And the amazing part was, Rav Ashri, of course, did not have access to Sfarim within the ghetto. So what he did was he recorded all of the questions that were asked him during the years in the ghetto. Rav Ashri survived. He did not know he was going to survive. So what he did was he buried the pieces of paper in a canister and left instructions with a couple of people saying, after the war, whoever survives, come back, you know, retrieve this and show the world. First of all, show the world from the tshuvas, you get an incredible window just into the atrocities of the Nazis, Yimach Shem v'Zichram. But more importantly than the atrocities, which that's nothing new to the Jewish people, what's even more incredible is the incredible strength of the Jewish spirit. The notion of the questions that people were asking during the most difficult and horrific times in Jewish history. See, he said, let it be an eternal sign to the nitzchius, to the eternality of the Jewish spirit. So Rav Ashri did survive. Rav Ashri came to this country, he actually settled on the Lower East Side. He was the Rav of a shul based Medrash HaGadol, which at one point in time was a major shul in the Lower East Side. And Rav Ashri went back after the war and republished all of these tshuvas. Because remember, during the war itself, he wasn't able to, in many cases, to provide what we call like a mara mokum, a site, a particular source. After the war, he went back and he redid all of the tshuvas, this time putting in their notations and going ahead and being ma'arich, elongating in certain areas where he felt it was necessary. And It's an incredible work. It just is an incredible work. They published it in one volume in English called Responsa from the Holocaust. The English version does not really do it justice. The Hebrew version is 6 volumes of Tshuvas of Rav Ashri. And what I'm quoting to you for you over here is in number 8. And I had the chus to meet Rav Ashri once in my life, but he's clearly just an incredible person. So if you look at number 8, this is from the Hakdama. So he has, to Shalz Tshuvas, he has an introduction. So in the introduction he writes, he asks this question. If you look at paragraph A, last 3 lines, V'yish lahavin al-das, ma'im shnei atzivuyim halalu sha'atorit tzivsa aleinu b'shnei lashon, tzivuy echa b'lashon shal zechira, v'tzivuy sheni b'nosav shalot tishkach. So Rav Ashri asks our question, or we ask Rav Ashri's question, which is, why does the Torah need to say zachar and lo tishkach? Why do you have to say remember and don't forget? And Rav Ashri says something amazing. He says, paragraph B. Achina inyunu pashat ad ma'od. Rav Ashri, I'm telling you, it's going to be very simple. The answer is very simple. Kisha Torah mitzava aleinu zachar is asher asalacha Amalek. When the Torah told us, remember what Amalek did to you. Bituchi ya Torah, shezachar niskra es hadavar. God knows that we are going to remember what Amalek did to us. Remember again, going back, Amalek is not, Rambam writes, that Amalek is not simply a geographic nation. Amalek represents, the Rambam writes, any nation, any people that is bent and focused on the destruction of the Jewish people, any nation who desires that, that is Amalek. So for example, one could posit that contemporarily, Yishmael is Amalek. Any nation that is just their sole focus is the destruction. You see, when you learn about the Holocaust, you see how the Nazis, Yimach Shem v'Zichram, their hatred of the Jewish people was counterintuitive. Hitler, Yimach Shem v'Zichram, could have conquered the civilized world. He could have. But he was so focused on annihilating the Jews that he lost the war. That's what hatred does. Amalek is so blinded by hatred for the Jewish people that literally, even to their own detriment, they will just go out. So he says, the fact that God tells us to remember what Amalek did to us, no problem. Of course we're going to remember. Those wounds are still gaping. They're still there. He says, now remember, Rav Ashri is applying this mandate to remember Amalek to the mandate to remember the Holocaust. He says, How can we not remember those days? Yomim, he's referring to his own days during the war. Yomim shal ema upachat shal hereg ushmad, days of incredible fear of destruction. Yomim shal machanos hezger umachlo'os gito. How can we forget about the concentration camps? How can we forget about the ghettos? Yomim shal kivshon ish. How can we forget about the furnaces? Shal hereg hamoni b'machonos yuria v'kibronos chayim shal alfe alafim ne'ahavim mi'im shebachayim mosim lo nifridu. How can we forget about the mass graves? How can we forget about the mass executions? Hey, how can we forget about the extermination camps? Auschwitz, Treblinka, Majdanek, Hamivtzar HaTishiv, the 9th Fort, Aydek, Ayat Kovno, Shisham Hutzel HaHoreg. He goes on, he quotes the rest of them. Paragraph C. Bituchi HaTorah. Shezachar niskar eis asher asalanu Amalek. Of course we will remember what Amalek did to us. Ki chok tiv'i hu hadavar. He goes on, he explains, how can, meaning even had God not said to remember, I would still remember. Because how can we not remember the pain that has been inflicted upon us? V'chol echad, skip down a couple of lines in paragraph C. V'chol echad misri de'esh, hatofi shal machnos hashmad, kol echad mi'audim hamutzalim me'esh, yaschilu lahakim mi'chadesh es harisos hachayim. But the Rosh says, you know what's going to happen? What's going to happen with the survivors? The survivors will find the courage to begin to rebuild. The survivors will find the courage to go ahead and build the lives that were destroyed. Hey, mivnu lahem batim chadashim. They will build new homes. V'yakimu mishpachos chadoshos, and they will establish new families. Hey, mishluchu b'mischar yedeyem or b'chol charoshes malacha. They'll become successful in business. Hey, miaschilu liros bracha b'maase yedeyem, and they will experience bracha. The important part, Rav Ashi says, if there's one thing about the Jewish people, that's the incredible resilience of our spirit. So even no matter how many families we lose, we will go ahead and establish new ones. No matter how much is taken from us in life, we will always rebuild and reestablish ourselves. V'yaschilu le'echom mituvan shalaratzos hachadoshos bahen matzu miflat umanoch la'achar kom ha'shav arleim. And we will be successful in all of the countries that took us in after the war. Hey, miyaschilu lorak le'echom mituvan shalaratzos halalu. We won't just simply eat of the good of the lands in which we are in, Elagam lisvoa mechay hamutara shalahem. But rather, we will be successful. And kachava, we know again, it's an amazing thing if you think about it, 70 years after 1/3 of our people were simply obliterated, look what a dominant force. You know, people joke about the fact that Jews controlled the world. It's not totally false, right? Meaning that Baruch Hashem, we do exert an inordinate amount of influence on the world, considering the smallness of our nation. And this is just 70 years after, again, we are being wiped out wholesale. After 1/3 of Klal Yisrael was obliterated. So Rav Ashi says, and remember, Rav Ashi is writing this in the months after the war. This is not today. He says, I know we're going to be successful. We're going to reestablish ourselves. Paragraph D, listen to this. As Rav Ashi says, it's dafka then. Yoda'as HaTorah. Sha'udim hamutzalim halalu sridi ha'esh yis'amtsu b'chol ma'amtse kocham lahavir kav amasha avrale. Rav Ashi says, I'll tell you what's going to happen. What's going to happen is, at the time that we begin to be successful, we're going to want to disassociate from our past. We're going to want to forget the pain and the suffering. Hey, yis'amtsu shlo liskar mashakara rak lifnei shtei esros shoshanim. We're going to want to forget what happened less than 20 years ago. Now you'll say, well, why would we want to forget what happened? Because people will say to themselves, Ma betza ki tiskerenu. What good does it do to constantly remember destruction? What good does it do to go ahead and remember the German war machine? Hello, Achshav Olam Chesed Yibana Olam Acher SheGermania Zu SheVia Cheres Uchoban LaOlam He Asa Mishameshes Yasad Upanav Makelos Arazo Shochros Achofesh. Turn to paragraph E. I'm sorry, turn the page on the side. VaHaDemokratia. So again, we're going to say this as, you know what? Germany is a different place. Also, it's a different government. They help out, they're very good, they do many chasadim in the world. Essentially what Rashi is saying is, there comes a point in time where people will say, what's the point of holding on to the pain? The pain simply shackles me to the past. The pain holds me back. The pain eats up so much of my emotional reservoirs. Would I not be better off just simply cutting my ties, almost like a little bit of cognitive dissonance, separating myself, pretending like it doesn't occur, so I could put all of my kochos into rebuilding, into being happy, into being successful? Says Rav Ashi, paragraph F. Lezos tzivtsa alinu haTorah. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows us better than we know ourselves. And God knows that there's going to be a natural desire to forget. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell us? Lo tishkach. And when does God tell us not to forget? And this is such a dramatic interpretation. Remember, if you go back for one moment, you don't have to go back, I'll read it to you. But if you go back to number 7 for just a moment, remember, God first tells us to remember Amalek. Then the pasuk goes on and says, and it will be when HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows you to settle in your land, this is referring to Eretz Yisrael, allows you to be successful, allows you to rebuild, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says again, lo tishkach, don't forget. Rav Ashri says, b'haniach Hashem lokecha, what is God saying to us? I know there's going to come a time in your life where you are successful and you're happy and you've rebuilt and you feel you've accomplished so much and you're going to feel that you should cut your ties with your past. You should cut your, not in a religious sense, but cut your ties with the suffering. Move on. Use your spiritual energy to something more productive. Therefore, in that moment, hizor v'hishamer shelo tishkach. Therefore, Rav Ashi says, it's dafka in that moment where God tells us, no. Don't forget. He says, Mashallucha Gemara Rotzim Alalu Dafka Az Bizman Amanucha Vatov. Even in times when life is good, Alul Atalishkoach Mashem Asulukach, you would be tempted to forget. V'lachin Bat Sivu Hanosaf Hazeh Lo Tishkach. So Rav Ashri has a dramatic interpretation of the pasuk. The first time in number 7, when God says, Zokor Is Asher Asalach Amalek, what is that talking about? That's in the immediate aftermath of the tragic event, in the immediate aftermath of the battle, in the immediate aftermath of Korban. Of course, everyone's going to forget. But as time goes on, and you're rebuilding, and you're putting your kohos, you're putting your energies into establishing for yourself a new existence, it's so tempting to cut your ties with the difficulties and suffering, because after all, they weigh you down. They hold you back. They take up so much of your emotional energy. And it's then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes along and says, no, lo tishkach. Even when you're successful, even when you're doing well, at the end of the day, don't forget. So of course, this message is important, not our topic for today, but in terms of the Holocaust, because you already see it happening. You already see it again. You know, I often say that for me, I'm not a native Baltimorean. And to me, what's so striking about Baltimore is that you have families that have been in America for multiple generations. I'm a first-generation American, right? Much of my family was lost in the war. And the truth is, for us, the Holocaust was always part of our ongoing family experience. But you see so many people who weren't as directly affected. It's only 70 years out. And already, again, the next generation, our children, aren't as familiar with it. So on a basic level, we can't forget our Churban. But I think what Rav Ashri is talking about on a deeper level, he's seeing something different. He's saying people often think that in order to be successful in life, you have to forget your pain. That in order to be successful in life, you have to overcome your pain. Rav Ashri says that is not the secret of success. The secret of successful living is not forgetting your pain, but listen very carefully. The secret of successful living is owning your pain. Take control of your pain. Take control of your difficulties. How do you own your pain? This goes back to what Rav Hirsch was saying, what Rashi was saying as well. You see, if your pain is just about you being a victim, if your pain is just about, oh, look what happened to me. Zelo fair, life is not going the way that I wanted, and sometimes in very dramatic ways. So if you're a victim, if your pain is just all about the way that God in life has treated you unfairly, then yes, that will hold you back. But if you own your pain and you say, yes, I have many difficult circumstances, some of them present, some of them past, but what am I going to get out of them? How can I grow? What can I do? How can I evolve? How do I introspect? If you own your pain, then suddenly again your pain becomes the greatest platform and catalyst for personal growth. And says Rav Ashri, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying. Zachar, yes, remember the pain. Everybody remembers the pain when it's fresh. But in that moment when you think that the only way to grow is to let go of your pain, disassociate from your pain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, lo tishkach, don't forget the pain, own the pain. Make it yours. When you make it yours, you figure out, this is my situation, these are my circumstances, I certainly didn't choose it, I perhaps would give anything to be able to change them, but that's not in the cards right now. This is my situation. And therefore, again, what can I do with it? How do I grow? What do I see for myself? What could I be? How do I evolve? And if we bring this all together, perhaps this is what David HaMelech is saying in this pasuk of Tehillim. Going back now, all the way back to number 1. So when David HaMelech says, Al Zos Yispalel, Kol chosid elecha le'eis mitzo. Remember again, if we bring everyone together. So now we have Rashi, Rav Hirsch, and Rav Ashri. So all of them together are saying, al zos, it's about a time like this. Now what's the zos referring to? The zos is referring to life difficulty and suffering. So what do I do when I find myself beset by challenges? Yispalel kol chosid le'eis mitzo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to daven. But again, remember, davening in this context doesn't really mean, yes, it means davening, but it means something much more than davening. What does it mean? It means, remember, Rav Hirsch, yispalel, hitpalel, palal, it means what?
Introspect.
In the moments when I find myself really enveloped and encircled by life difficulties and challenges, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to reach out to you. Yes, I'm going to daven to you because I need your help. But what I'm also going to do is I'm not going to just look upward. I'm going to look inward. I'm going to try to figure out what do I do with this situation. According to Rav Hirsch and according to Rav Ashri, I'm going to own my pain. I'm going to own my circumstances. I didn't create them. I don't want them. But I'm going to try to figure out by thorough introspection, what can I do with them? How can I react to them? How can I grow from these circumstances? And if I own my pain, something amazing happens. Rak L'shatef mayim rabim elav lo yagiyu. Something amazing happens, which is, if I own my pain, suddenly my pain doesn't own me, I own the pain. If I own my pain, so the waters of life turbulence can't drown me or overtake me, it's difficult, but it won't totally consume me. So here what's happening over here, so if we bring this all together, what we see over here is really three dramatically different themes. Number one is going along in the tshuva motif, same tshuva motif as before, and with this we'll conclude. Same tshuva motif as before, namely that although there are times that are always ripe for tshuva, there are certain times that are more ripe than others, and therefore the time when God makes himself available, make sure to seize that opportunity. Approach number two, one really requires siyata d'shmaya, divine providence, in so many areas of life, be it marriage, spirituality, death, and burial. And approach number three, we all find ourselves enveloped by challenge. What's the Davidic approach to dealing with challenge? Really, two steps. To be a mispalo, not just to daven to God, but to introspect, to figure out again, how can I grow? How can I react? What can I do in these particular circumstances? To reach out to God, but also to reach out to myself internally. To introspect, to own my pain. And if I introspect, if I own my pain, if I turn my negative circumstances into somehow a platform for growth, a platform to ultimately allow myself to evolve and to push my life agenda forward, then David HaMelech assures us, as turbulent and as raging as the waters of difficulty may be, they will never overtake us. All right, we'll stop over here for today. Yes. Rabbi Ephraim Ashri. O-S-H-R-Y.